This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 33. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-323-97543.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome to the show, Garras. Welcome to the show, Berners. Another week of Pitch Vision Academy cricket show goodness in the offing. You've got some big plans this week, Berners.
Big plans for the podcast. Yeah, I'm going to revolutionise it this week. It's going to be a start of a new era.
Yep. Oh, well, yeah, exactly. It's a new medium and we're all finding our feet, but it's an exciting way to get the information out there. And I think it's probably the highlight of my week. I don't know about you, Mark Garraway, but it's certainly the highlight of my week, just being able to talk about cricket for half an hour.
Well, it's always good, isn't it? And I think we get to talk about cricket a lot of times during the week because it fairly dominates our lives. But true. No, you're absolutely right. Coming together and having a chat about it and answering a number of the questions from the listeners. It's something I always look forward to.
All three of us being in the Northern Hemisphere, we're sort of just about starting to look towards the end of the season now. And I thought it was a good opportunity for us all to think about things that we've learned over the summer. I thought it'd be quite interesting because I think learning new things is very important, no matter what stage of your cricketing career you're at, whether you're just starting out as a young player, whether you're coaching or whether you've been involved in the game for 50 years or more. I think it's important to keep learning things. So, Garras, what have you learned this summer that you didn't know a few months ago?
What have I learned? I'll tell you what's been really impactful to me, and I didn't get how much difference it was going to make is the new ODI rules, which are now filtering into club cricket and into school cricket, in particular that period of time in the middle or towards the end of the game where you're only allowed three people outside the circle. That's made a huge difference to one day cricket and to the shots that are played and to the tactics that fielding sides have to put into place. And the more of that type of cricket that I'm seeing, the more I'm realising that I've probably got to sharpen up my skills in coaching the various techniques and tactics that go alongside it. So, yeah, that's been the biggest thing for me.
Interesting. And what does that mean to you, having the extra man inside the circle and not being able to have so many out on the boundary?
Well, you know, I thought in some ways, and obviously there was going to be an increase in scoring rate, but I thought that spinners would come into the game because you can pretty, with spin, you can sort of limit where you get hit to a point, you know, and the areas that you get hit out to. But I thought it would squeeze people to be able to rotate strike. But of course, nobody really, unless you're in the absolute doo-doo, have looked to rotate strike in that five-over period. They've just looked to launch. And I found it fascinating how many boundaries are being scored in areas that aren't so easy to defend. And that, you know, sides have gone with deep mid-off, deep mid-on, and maybe deep square. But players have got very good at leaving their stumps outside leg stump now and hitting through the offside, which always used to be fraught with danger. But people have practiced it so sufficiently that it's now become a skill. And also that drop kick or that slog sweep over the top of straight mid-wicket has become really effectively done. And I'm not talking about just the best players, but actually some guys that are middle order players and some guys that are lower order players as well. So I've been amazed at how easily batters have found it to score boundaries in that period, particularly against an over or two of spin that may be bowled in that five over period.
Berners, I'm rubbing my hands in anticipation of what you've learned in the last few months.
Got a couple actually, but one's related to the ruling, and that maybe teaching a kid or a young player to get in close to the stumps might require a new art, as it's going to be rewarded with a glorious no ball moving forwards. We've got a player who plays at our club, and I don't think we'll ever finish the game because the fella knocks the bells off about three times every over. And it's painful enough watching the umpire having to pick the stumps up and pick the bells up and reset them every time. And for him, it's going to be really hard. I mean, he's about 21 and he's done it all his life. So he's suddenly going to start giving away all kinds of extras. The second is that it's about time that we started to create airless sight screens, as I was in the predicament this year of turning up at a venue that had its tyres slashed and it took all 11 players of the opposition to move the sight screen. It got to a stage when the player started rotating then over the wicket and around the wicket and couldn't really ask all 11 of them to actually physically pick the sight screen up each time and move it either side. So, yeah, for all of those cricket manufacturers and suppliers out there, it's time for the good old-fashioned hard rubber wheel. There's all walks of the game that haven't changed for years and no one's actually thought about doing anything. I mean, I think that in this very century that we've still got iron wheels on a sight screen and there's no one's thought of a novel way or a lighter way to erect something behind the bowler's arm. I don't know what it might be, but crazy. There's a big market out there for anyone listening.
Some kind of retractable device that goes into the into the ground or something.
Carbon stumps, you know, is that allowed or so, you know, something that doesn't break? Carbon stumps and bales that will never break. Is there any law that suggests that the stumps have got to be made of ash wood? I mean, I know they've got to be a certain dimension and size, but surely you can make them out of anything.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, actually, and I'm sure somebody listening who's more au fait with the laws of the game, I'm more into the regulations and how I can exploit them as a coach. But, you know, there'll be some coaches out there that are excellent at the umpiring side of things or have been on their umpiring course, which I did a long time ago and failed miserably. So maybe somebody can get in touch with us on that one. I'm not too sure.
Bernard's just been looking at the lords.org website while we've been chatting there, and it is law 8.1. Each set shall consist of three wooden stumps with two wooden bales on top. So you can abandon your new business. It's a failure.
I'm upset about it because I don't see why they should be made out of wood, and there'll be a letter in the post. In fact, I'm going to deliver it by hand because I'm heading there on Friday.
Dennis Lilly style, you can get a metal stump and you can hurl it.
Yep.
That's a reference for the kids, that one, isn't it?
Dennis Lilly.
Well, I'll tell you what my thing is. It was a little bit of an aha moment, really, and it's to do with coaching style. I've been lucky enough to work with quite a few different coaches over this summer, and the range of personalities is interesting to watch. And one coach I work with, his enthusiasm was boundless in the face of some quite difficult situations. Younger boys, maybe not quite as focused as they should be, yet his sheer enthusiasm, boundless enthusiasm, and ability to turn around even the most ridiculous messing about into something useful was amazing to me. And then at the other end of the scale, the coach who got similarly enthusiastic, but his reaction to things was to get angry about them and to get annoyed and to make a point of, you know, pointing out people and saying that, you know, if you don't pay attention, there's no point in playing, and that kind of style. And for me, it was a bit of an aha moment that you can, if you're just enthusiastic and you're willing to use your energy and your language and your enthusiasm, then you can handle those situations where everyone isn't necessarily listening to rapt to every word that you say, which happens quite a lot when you're coaching at club level. If you can get a handle on that, that'll boost your coaching immensely.
Yeah, good point. No, I totally agree with that, mate.
Okay, let's finish up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions from Berners, who is poised with those questions, and Garrows and I can only answer yes or no. Fingers crossed we're going to have a little bit of consideration and maybe some disagreement, but we can't go into it too much. So, Berners, what are the questions this week?
First question, handling pressure is the most important element of batting.
Yes.
No.
Second question, age is not a factor in cricket selection.
No.
Age is not a factor. Age isn't a factor, so I think that's a no.
Third question. Match fixers should have career records erased.
No.
No.
I think yes.
Time now for the mailbag, and every week we have two questions, the best of which wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of PitchVision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got a couple of questions ready to go, and Gareth and I will do our best to answer them. So what's the first question this week?
Well, the first question not only is quite intriguing, but it does come from my favourite questionnaire.
Oh, yes.
In Wolf. The Wolf is back.
Welcome back, Wolf.
Excellent news.
And he's ready to roar. So the Wolf's question revolves around a recent interview with Australian cricketer Michael Sheedy, who emphasises that knowing your game, stating that under pressure habits come through, going on to say that habits coming through under pressure could be seen as the theme of the current Ashes series, in brackets, perhaps for the officials as well. And he was wondering how our view of this dynamic in competitive cricket, as well as our own teaching and learning.
Yeah, so for me, the question is, how does dealing with pressure influence coaching and playing? When you think about it in that context, rather than in the context of improving someone's technique, for example, how does that change the way that you coach a player? How does that change the way a player approaches their practice and their playing? So I think it's an interesting, a rich area for discussion. Gareth, what are your initial thoughts?
I completely agree. I think when players are under pressure, we do see changes, and you do revert back to the things that you've probably had to work hardest at. And we call it reverting to type, both as people when you are under pressure, but also as players as well. So when we are under pressure, our dark side comes out of us. You know, the things that we don't like so much about ourselves sometimes just come out of us without any control whatsoever. And the same with our batting or our bowling, and in this case probably our batting more so, because we've been talking about the Australian batting, haven't we, within this question. So I have seen that. You know, you look at Shane Watson, for example. His Achilles heel that he's worked at for donkey's years has been LBWs, and the stats have stood that up. But this series, he's been attacked in that area. He's been put under pressure because he's one of the senior players in a very young batting lineup and a very inexperienced batting lineup. And as a result, that front foot's coming across and he's getting everything misaligned. And the likes of Bresnan and Anderson and others have targeted his pads and reaped the rewards. And that's a classic example. But that's everybody. You know, when you're under massive amounts of pressure, that's exactly what happens. You have things that you try to keep down as best as you can often come up. Now, the guys that we're working with at the moment around personality profiling as well as technical profiling, would say that in those examples, and another example being Kevin Peterson against left arm spin, instead of holding on to your technique and really forcing yourself to hold on to your technique, you should just let your body do what it feels is the most natural thing to do. So whilst we are holding back our urge to try and do something different, we should actually just let that go. And when we do that, will be far more successful. And they give a fantastic example of when Lionel Messi missed a penalty against Chelsea in the semi-final of the Champions League. And it was a crucial time of the game. And even the great Lionel Messi was under pressure. And he normally side-foots his kicks when he takes penalties. And he obviously realised he was under pressure and he forced himself to side-foot his kick instead of just sticking his foot through it. Because he was under pressure, his side foot was never going to be as effective, so he should have just put his foot through the ball. And it's a fantastic example. So Kevin Peterson, instead of trying to continue to be crouched and getting his technique as it would be normally when he's at the top of a game against seamers, should actually stand up more and do the complete opposite of what he's doing, because he should let his body is let its body just do what it wants. So I completely agree with the question. We've seen Watson try to hold on to his technique and as a result has failed. We've seen Khawaja try and hold on to his technique and as a result has failed. And I think the question that Wolf has put is absolutely spot on. Just let your body do what it wants to do and you give yourself the best chance of success. Not very easy to do because you've got to trust yourself. And it's not particularly easy, but the best players manage to do it.
That's an interesting point, Garrison, not one that I necessarily thought that you might say. The reason why I say that is because if you sort of unclench, if you like, relax, mentally unclench, and let yourself do what instinctively you do rather than thinking about a technical thing, which is, you know, which perhaps some people say overthinking things or, you know, overcoached is another word that people use. So all those things sound good. But if what you're naturally doing is a bad habit because you're under pressure, is that something that you should think about as well? You know, where is the line, I guess, is my follow-up question to that.
Well, I mean, you listened to the interviews, didn't you, that Shane Watson gave, because he doesn't give a massive amount of interviews. And he got stuck up in front of the press to talk about his LBW problem and to talk about his technique. And the thing that pleased me as an England supporter was the fact that he started to talk about all the things that he was doing in his practice to try and remedy the fact that his front foot was going over. So he was focusing on that and trying to stop his front foot from going over. And to me, that was always going to be something that was going to continue to happen. And obviously at Durham, you saw in that second innings in particular, when Bresnan was bowling at him, that front foot was coming across. So he was battling with his technique rather than just allowing stuff to happen and trying to adapt. So, you know, there's a classic example to me of just let yourself go and just do what you need to do to survive, because that survival period is normally quite short. But we've got to get through it. And if we get through that survival period, then we can start to bat in our normal technique again, or start to bowl in our normal technique again, because you only have to survive for a little bit before it becomes a little bit rosier. But people, when they're trying to survive, really focus on trying not to do something or trying to battle against their technique, instead of just letting themselves go and finding out 10 minutes later that you've got through that rocky patch and you can just do what you want there.
Yep. And I agree with that, in that, you know, you don't want to be artificially trying to do too much. And it's a really good example, that getting stuck and playing around your front pad is a really good example, because that happens a lot. A lot of cricketers do that. It's a natural thing for a lot of players, especially if they are the type of player that Watson is. But in Watson's case as well, you know, trying to make technical changes between Ashes Test matches is probably not a very sensible idea, because you're not going to get enough time to be able to do anything significant. But if he has a longer period away from competitive cricket, high intensity cricket, then I guess that would be a time when he would be thinking about working on that kind of problem and trying to lock in. Getting rid of that issue, because otherwise it's, you know, people are going to keep targeting him in that way, and he's going to be keep getting out in that way.
You're absolutely right, and this is where the timing comes in, isn't it? You know, and the great thing about having a period of time to work at something like Shane Watson will have to work at some point. Is that it's not pressurized, is it? You're not in the middle of competition. You're not at a time where everything is being scrutinized. You can actually be in the middle of a net, nowhere near the cameras, nowhere near anybody watching, and you can remedy this stuff. But whilst you're in competition and whilst you're under pressure, you know, there's no more pressure than batting in an Ashes series, particularly if you're in a losing position and the other team are on top of you and they think they've got you in their pocket. There's no more pressure in batting than there is at that time. And that's exactly where he is, and another number of other players have been over history. You're absolutely right. Just let yourself go. And it's great from an England perspective, again, to hear that he's on his last chance. You know, the word is that he's been given his last chance by Michael Clarke. Now, whether that's true or not is largely irrelevant, to be honest, because that's the talk that's going around, and that's more pressure that's going to be exerted on him. So I'm fascinated in what happens to Shane Watson over the course of the next few days in the fifth and final Ashes test.
So let's take that to a lower level. Let's talk about, say, a club cricketer, an academy cricketer, a school cricketer. They might be playing one game a week. They're playing the Saturday afternoon match, and then they find that they have a technical fault. Let's say it's the same as Watson. You know, they find that they're playing around their front pad. They get out LBW 3 weeks in a row. Word gets around, as it does, that the guy's not so great against the in-swinging ball. Everyone's bowling to that and trying to get him out. Do you have time to work on it then as a club player, or do you save that kind of technical stuff for when there's no competitive cricket at all, and you do that thing of scoring runs in an ugly way as possible?
Well, I think you've got two options, haven't you? You just go about scoring runs as ugly as you can and get through it, because those ugly runs, you know, if you bat long enough, you won't be getting ugly runs towards the end of your innings. It might just be that the start of the first 20 might be not exactly in the scoring areas that you're looking for.
And an ugly 100's 100, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you remember back to Alistair Cook a couple of years ago before his unbelievable Ashes trip to Australia. He got to this test match of the summer that's just about to come up at the Oval, and everybody was saying, you know, should he be dropped and should he be axed from the Ashes? Well, he went in there, and I think he got a bit of luck early on. He's nicked a few down to third man. He struggled a little bit, and then all of a sudden got a double 100, and then he's off. And he had the best year of his life after that. So it's normally a short-term thing that you have to get through. You've just got to find a way in matches. Going back to the question about the week programmes, you know, take a view. You can either say to yourself, right, it's not going particularly well at the moment. I can work during the weeks really, really hard, but I'm going to give myself 3 weeks, a realistic goal of getting it right within 3 weeks, as opposed to focusing purely on the Saturday that's coming up. Now, obviously, you're going to have some focus towards that, but let's go, well, I've got 3 weeks to get this sorted, so I'm going to work on a Tuesday and a Thursday, and on a Tuesday, I'm going to work technically, and that's all going to be my focus. On the Thursday, I'm going to put the practice into nets and see if it can, the work that I did on the Tuesday goes through, and I'm going to give myself 3 weeks of that program so that on the third Saturday, I'm actually feeling a little bit more like myself again. So just, again, be really realistic. Now, that's an unusual way to look at things, because the normal way to look at things is to go, it's all about Saturday, and put yourself under pressure, and then you get yourself up, I feel all right, and then somebody bowls you an in-swing, you miss it, you get LB plonk, and then all of a sudden you're down in the doldrums again. So take a helicopter view, drive yourself about 100 foot above the ground that you're playing on, and go, right, this is a three-week project. This is the way I'm going to work, and this is the way I'm going to get through it. And for those guys that are coming into their season in the Southern Hemisphere and in India and all of those places, you've got the opportunity that if it doesn't go well in your first couple of weeks, instead of being down in the doldrums, give yourself a three-week plan and then see where you are after that third week.
Our next question comes in from Cups, and he is asking, how important is the leave? And also, how important is it to have a good leave?
Yeah, well, if you ask Desmond Haynes, he'll tell you what the best leaver ever, possibly. He'll say it's very important. It's one of those. Now, this is one of those questions that really the answer is yes. It's very important to have a good leave. Thanks very much. but I think we've got discussion about leaving to be had here, Gareth, in that. The leave, which is the absence of a shot, is a very, very important aspect in all cricket, isn't it? Judgment of line, judgment of length.
Yeah, it is. It's massively important because, you know, you want to stay in for long enough, and a leave is part of a process that allows you to do that and to sum up what the ball's doing. But if you listen to some of the greats, and I've certainly taken this on board in my coaching, the leave is so important because it sends a message. Every ball, Graham Gooch talks about it all the time, every ball that you face, you've got the opportunity as a batter to send a message back to the bowler. And if you can visualise a Matthew Hayden or a Ricky Ponting leave, they're so assertive with their leaves. They're almost saying to you, you bowl it there again and I'm going to spank you through the offside, you know, I'm going to hit you through cover. And you almost scare the bowler into shifting their length because everything is so positive. So I'm a huge fan of it, and it's something that I mention in my coaching on a regular basis with batters. And I know that Graham Gooch talks to all of the England batters about on a regular basis is to ensure that you send a message, whether you're in defence, whether you're in attack, whether you're leaving the ball, whatever you're doing, you're sending a message to the bowler that says, I'm in charge and you're now under pressure. So the leave is massively, massively important. And, you know, you look at the positive levers, the really positive levers like a Ponting, as I say. But then you look at the really watchful levers like a Dravid, and Dravid saying, you know, waste your energy, waste your energy, waste your energy, and then I'll pick you off. And yet they're both great messages to be going back to bowlers. So going back to the question, how important to leave, I think it's hugely important. Obviously, the context of a game and the format of a game dictates how many leaves you can afford to make to send that message across. And you need to bear that in mind, because otherwise, in the shorter formats, you could be putting yourself or your partner under undue stress and pressure. So you need to factor that in. But, you know, in general, batting of longer formats of a game, you can put people under pressure by saying to them, I'm in charge. You bowl it there again like a rookie Ponting, and I'm gonna nail you. And so I completely agree that it's a massive thing to learn, but then to use in the context of a game.
It's about control, isn't it? It's about saying I've decided that this delivery is of no interest to me, and being positive with it even when you're decided not to play a shot. You can be just as positive with a leave as you can with a blazing cover drive. It's as you say, Gareth, it's all about the message that you send to the bowler. You know, you can't tempt me with that little away swinger outside off stump. You're going to have to do something a bit more clever than that. And we have a batsman in our club who is an absolute master of two things: the leave outside the off stump and the flick off the legs over square leg for four. So if you that gets him a heck of a lot of runs, because anything outside off stump, he has absolutely no interest in. So the bowler adjusts his line, he straightens up, and the ball goes over square leg for four. So it's it's a very frustrating thing for a bowler who thinks to himself, well, what can I do here to get this guy out? He's not gonna anything straight. He's gonna flick off his legs, and anything outside the off stump, he's just gonna leave unless it's a very long half volley.
It's an opener.
But that's great batting, isn't it? That's proper batsmanship. And it doesn't matter what level you're playing at. We've all got examples of guys that do exactly what you've just described. And a bloke called Steve Waugh largely got, you know, 11,000 runs or whatever he got in Test cricket doing exactly the same. So, fantastic, fantastic message that leave brings around that flick off legs for that chap. And it can bring around a number of different areas for your scoring areas for yourself when you're batting. So absolutely brilliant example.
As an opener, I always found that if I'd been struggling, or if I was playing in, you know, certain conditions which I thought were going to be quite taxing, I would always deploy the leave for maybe even up to times the first three overs, just to get the actual pace, and also from the bowlers, you know, to see his actual act, so that, you know, if he's not going to bowl straight, I'm not going to put any pressure on myself. I'm just going to sit there and go, thanks a lot, mate. I'm pretty much scoping you out here. And then, of course, as you start to get your eye in and you pick the length up earlier and you're picking the pace of the ball up, when he does bowl you that ball that you want to take on, it becomes a subtly different equation to doing that prior to having seen him play.
Let's leave the leaves there, shall we?
Yep.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we've done some good leaving. Now it's time to hit on the up a bit more.
Okay. Speaking of leaving, let's leave the show temporarily to head to the newsroom for this week's Pitch Vision Academy headlines with Daisy Cutter.
Thank you, guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. First up, we have a bit of product news. Pitch Vision have built sensors into traditional wooden stumps to detect when the ball makes contact. the new Smart Stumps is an upgrade on Pitch Vision's existing stump sensors, which was a hood added to stumps. With the sensors now directly integrated into the stumps themselves, players can enjoy a totally natural looking playing environment. The Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show's very own Burners is on the cusp of a milestone. With 49 wickets on Pitch Vision in the bag, the left-arm spinner is bowling under pressure at his next session. Here's hoping he can improve on his strike rate of a measly 26.22. To see Burners in action, search for Tuffy 1981 on Pitch Vision Interactive or follow the link in the show notes. In shocking news, Pitch Vision CEO Richard Welsh's family holiday in sunny Turkey was badly disrupted by a mystery project kicking off in South Africa. The senior executive was last seen desperately looking for an internet cafe and talking about floor plans. Based on past behaviour, we can expect a big announcement soon. And finally, cricket in America gains a boost with the California Cricket Academy. The CCA recently finished its tour to England with a practice session at Lord's. Academy Director Henmont took the chance to meet with Pitch Vision about further increasing standards in the USA. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
And of course, Burners, your legend is building as well. 49 wickets on Pitch Vision.
Yeah, I like to mix it up. Just a few left-arm orthodox, but it was really troubling the lads down at Marlow Academy the other day, and I'm hoping to reach that significant milestone in the next couple of days, actually. We've got a couple of site demos and I will be with a couple of customers, so now no doubt we'll be marking my run up out.
It's soapbox time on the show. We've got David, he's taking a run up today to climb up on top of his soapbox, and you've got a minute, mate. Off you go.
I've been working on my vertical jump so I can land softly on top of it. But this week I wanted to talk about cricket and life, and there's been some noticeable news about various players regarding their life encroaching on their cricket. Monty Panesar being a good example of how that's going a bit wrong for him at the moment. Fingers crossed that it's all going to get sorted out as quickly as possible. But it just goes to show for me that cricket doesn't live in its own little bubble. Sometimes you can assume it does, but it's tied into the rest of life so detailed in so many ways that you have to be able to consider every aspect of your life if you want to improve as a cricketer. So I guess the message for me this week is that you need to bear in mind the whole encompassing aspects of your life and not just thinking about cricket training when you want to improve. That is the end of the show for this week. We're going to head off back onto the internet, but before we do that, we have the question of this week's prize winner, which is of course an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had a question from Wolf, who we know isn't that bothered about prize winning, and we had a question from Cups regarding leaving. So Gareth, it may be a foregone conclusion this week.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought Wolf's question was absolutely brilliant. You know, there's some topical examples, isn't there, in this present Ashes series. And also then we took it into what it means for a club cricketer as well. So I thought that was a great question. And as you say, Wolf isn't that bothered about having too many courses because he's already got a whole collection of them. So this week I'm going to go with Cups, is purely because I like giving things out. So well done, Cups. You've been the benefactor of somebody else's generosity.
Congratulations to you, Cups. And thanks a lot, Wolf, for your continued interesting questions. Please keep sending them in. We love getting a question from you. It's always thoughtful and detailed. And speaking of thoughtful and detailed questions, Berners, if somebody wanted to send in their question, have it answered on the show and perhaps win a prize, what would they need to do?
They can drop us a call. The number here is 020-323-97543, or get in contact via email, and the address is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, it is. You can find us on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. You can find us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PetrovisionAcademy. We post videos there, and you can have some cricket coaching chat in that section. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so as well. You would need to subscribe to the show. You can use iTunes for that if you want. Just go into iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll see the subscribe button there. And if you want to subscribe in any other way, you can do so quite easily by going to pitchvision.com/academy, clicking on the podcast link, and you'll find all the details for how to do that in there. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.